Welcome back to Not Another Mummy Podcast with me, Alison Perry. I'm joined today by Harriet Shearsmith, mum of three and presenter of the Unfollowing Mum podcast about breaking the parenting cycle, unsubscribing from drama by healing generational trauma and putting ourselves and our mental health first. She's also the author of book Mum in It and posts on social media as Toby and Rue. Harriet, a huge welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming along. How are you doing today? What does the end of February look like for you?
Do you know, it's been a bit hectic, actually, and my eldest is turning 13 in a couple of weeks, and that feels like such a big moment. Somebody said to me last week, oh, you're doing something big for him because he's becoming a teenager, and I was like, no. Oh, God. Was I meant to?
I didn't do anything big for mine, like for my eldest, and I had the same thought process as you. I remember she's a September baby, and you know what September is like. It's always like kids are going back to school, there's a million and one things to do, and I suddenly had this thought of, oh no, should I be doing something like taking her into London for a night?
Yeah.
And going to do something extravagant, and we didn't, and it was okay. And I do wonder whether it's one of those things that parents put the pressure on ourselves, but the kids don't expect it.
Yeah, I think so, you know. And I've said to him, like, do you want like any kind of party? And it was almost like, why am I three? Like, no, why would I want a party? I'll just text my friends that we'll go to the park. I'm like, okay.
Did a little bit of you die inside as well, just because you're just like, oh, my baby doesn't want a party anymore.
Absolutely. And he's not like he's not got the biggest friendship circle. Like, I can imagine my middle son, when he turns 13, he's going to be like, right, mum, prepare yourself. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. The schedule is this. No sleep, no rest. And I'm just going to have to be like, okay, dial it back, Skippy. But my eldest is just like, yeah, whatever. I'm not really.
I feel like for so many of them turning 13, it really is about them, like, you know, cutting the apron strings. You know, I've got a side hustle, which is like running a sleepover party business. And so we create these magical sleepovers for kids. So my 13-year-old was like, oh, I want a sleepover for my birthday. And I was like, great, like rolling my sleeves up, like, you've come to the right person. And she was like, no, I don't want any of the tents or the fairy lights. She literally wanted three friends, like mattresses and duvets on the floor in the living room, watching movies, eating popcorn. And I was like, okay, fine. Yeah, I'll just back off into the corner. Don't worry about me.
You're so dismissed, aren't you? You're just like, thanks for coming, but your job's done now, thanks. Exactly. Until you're actually needed. I know Edith is dead keen on having a sleepover party. I do feel a bit guilty because her birthday was in January and she hasn't had a party this year. But I kind of thought we'd got to the end of parties.
How old is she going to be? Nine?
She's just turned nine. And that was when she turned around like a week beforehand and went, so for my party? And I was like,
no.
Well, they've always had parties, and the boys kind of fizzled out about that age. It was like, oh, I might take a friend to do some trampolining, or we'll go to a football match, or whatever. They just weren't bothered. Whereas Edith's like, so about my party, literally a week before. So she's not had one, and I've said maybe we'll do something in Easter.
To be fair, though, like, as you know, when we grow up and we become adults, we like a good party. So I feel like Edith is just like, she's got it sorted. Like, she knows that parties are where it's at.
She does. And she's going to be every year. She was like looking through all these different amazing Harry Potter sleepover things with the tents and that. And she was like, this would be nice for Easter. Sure. Why not? I am a bottomless pit. Go for it, kid. Why not? But she was dead keen on it. So she's living her best life.
Bless her. So I want to talk to you today about cycle breaking parenting. For anyone who might be unfamiliar with the term, can you explain in a nutshell what it is?
Yes, I can. So I think cycle breaking parenting is often misrepresented. You can be someone who is a cycle breaker and also has a great relationship with their parent, but is looking back at the things that have happened throughout your life and saying, you know what, I'm going to parent differently to that. I want things to go differently. There are lots of things from my childhood that I remember that perhaps were the generational norm then, or were the generational norm within your family unit, that don't sit right with you. And you're saying, right, this is going to be different for me and I'm going to break that cycle. And often when we think about breaking the cycle, it's the toxic things that we have within dysfunctional family units or even within functional family units that are passed down through generation after generation. Grandma did it, great grandma did it, or great grandfather did it. And it's not a gendered thing, but it's so, you can see the patterns so frequently. And at some point it's for somebody to step in and go, I'm going to change this. And that's when you have a cycle breaker. And it can be on a really big scale and it can be on a much smaller scale. I think in some aspects, we're all breaking some cycles because parenting evolves, it changes. But when we think about the classic cycle breaker, it's someone who's stepping away from what has been their family norm.
What are the things that you personally are doing to, like, what are the things that you heard and saw as a child that you're personally ditching, that you're making an effort not to bring into your own kids' lives?
I think for me, one of the biggest things is respecting their autonomy. I'm going to put it under that bracket, respecting their autonomy physically and emotionally. They are their own people, and that's beautiful. They have different ideas to me, and that's wonderful. And that's something that I definitely did not have as a child, physically or emotionally. My autonomy was not respected. And I think that that is a huge thing. And when I say that, and I mean respecting them as an individual and respecting them as a person, I think that is part and parcel of, like we said, allowing them to, what we would have been accused of as answering back, allowing them to have a say, giving them grace when they make those mistakes. Another thing that I'm really keen not to do is to tell them that I'm disappointed. That's quite a big one. And something that recently I was discussing with a friend who is a trauma specialist therapist. And I'd said to her, well, I say sometimes I'm really disappointed in that behavior. And she'd said, well, did you used to get on really disappointed in you a lot? And I'd say, oh, yeah, all the time. And she said, well, how did it make you feel? And I said, oh, well, awful, you know, really horrible thing to hear that I disappointed the parent, like that was awful. And I said, but surely it's different if you say I'm disappointed in what you did there, because maybe I am disappointed. And she'd said, the thing is, for kids, disappointment is such a big thing that it comes so wrapped up in shame.
Yeah.
But when we tell them we're disappointed, whether we're disappointed in them or whether we're disappointed in just their action, it's really just shaming them.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily teach them anything. I feel that what you did there was not right is a much better way of saying pretty much the same thing as what you're trying to say. I feel what you did there was wrong and that's caused hurt to somebody, or something along those lines, as opposed to I'm just really disappointed in you. So I'm trying really hard to incorporate that. And that's the other thing, as cycle breakers, part of the beauty is we're always learning. I was not the mother for my eldest child that I would be proud of. I can say that, and I've spoken to him about this on a number of occasions. I think I picked up a lot of my mum's toxic habits, and he's always like, oh, mum, it wasn't that bad. And I see it now. He's very much like, oh, mum, it wasn't that bad. I was like, it was terrible. And he's like, it really wasn't. But I can sit and have those conversations with him and say, well, that wasn't right of me to speak to you like that, to behave that way towards you, and have that humility to do better and to be a different parent every day, learning different things, and to cut myself some slack when I do get it wrong, because I know that I can go to them and make that repair. I think too often it's very black and white thinking of, if you make a mistake, that mistake will linger. And, you know, in some cases, yes, that might be true. That mistake might be a whopper, and it might, but you can build that repair, and that's really powerful.
I think that's one of the biggest things that I learned in therapy was the notion of rupture and repair, and
yes,
how far the repair will go, and that the worst thing you can do is to just not repair that rupture.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite reassuring. It's like, okay, so if I do mess up, I just need to apologize and try and make things better and explain, and hopefully it will be okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would say as well, I mean, just reflecting a little bit on the cycle breaking, I think for me, it's really the major one for me is allowing my children to cry and get upset and feel their emotions. You know, as children, we were, I mean, I don't know about you, Harriet, but I was told, like, you know, don't cry, you know, dry your teeth.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Here's...
Do you want me to give you something to cry about?
Oh my goodness, all of that, exactly. Like, hello.
No. No, I'm good. I'm already crying. Like, do I need you to make it worse? No.
Exactly.
What even is that question?
So yeah, like just trying to let them express their feelings, which can be really hard. So that's a really hard one. And then things like I'm trying, and this is a work in progress. I'm trying so hard to stop saying, good girl. I've got three girls. Good girl, good girl. I'm trying so hard to stop, you know, making them think that to be good is the ultimate goal, that if, you know, to seek approval, to it's so ingrained in me. And my mum, bless her, you know, whenever she visits, she'll be like, good girl. Oh, I've not to say that. I'm like, don't worry, mum. I slip up too. I say it all the time too. And I'm trying so hard. And it's so lovely to see the generation above me being aware of that kind of thing as well, and trying to make a real effort to change the way that they speak to the kids as well.
Yeah, and so much of what you're doing and what you're challenging within yourself is conditioned. It is something that you've had from when you were tiny, be it from your parents, be it from society, be it from culture. There's so many things that are conditioned within us. Like you say, the good girl, when you are actively aware of that, even when it pops out and you challenge it, that's where the big changes lie, because you're challenging it. And you might not fully break the cycle on everything, but then that's where your children pick up the mantle and they move forward with breaking the cycle. And you empower them with those tools by teaching them how to set boundaries, by teaching them how to challenge things. They're really important.
And it's interesting you saying, you know, saying that, because I feel like there's probably someone listening who's thinking, well, I didn't suffer any bad effects from anything that happened to me as a child, so no cycle breaking is required here. Like, do you feel like that's quite a common reaction to the notion of cycle breaking?
Yes, I think it is. And I think there's also an element with cycle breaking of when we talk about breaking the cycle, of almost feeling like we're blaming our parents. And if that does resonate with you, that is absolutely fine. Perhaps you have things that you feel your parents need to be accountable for, and that is okay. But it's also okay if you sit in that space where you feel you had an okay childhood. You don't really feel that there's much that went wrong. You know, you think, okay, I was relatively happy. We had, you know, mostly good relationships, but there are still things that I would not do with my child. And it doesn't necessarily have to be about pointing the finger at parents saying, you got this wrong, you were a bad parent, but in saying, I'm going to do things differently.
I think that's something that's really common as well. Like, I know that I've struggled with that in the past. The guilt that comes with cycle breaking, it's like, I find myself almost like trying to justify my parents' actions, and like, oh, you know, it was normal back then, and I feel bad criticizing their parents and my parents. And also, it does feel like you say, every generation there is some element of change, and I'm quite sure our kids will be telling us about all of the things that we've done wrong and how they're doing things differently. That's quite normal, isn't it?
It is. And I'm a qualified coach, and this is something that I see when I work with clients, and I work specifically with people who have experienced either estrangement or generational trauma. And it's that kind of that shame almost of saying, well, my parent got this wrong. And it's almost as if, well, if you're stepping away from that, that must mean that you are really pointing the finger and you're really angry with them. But again, with cycle breaking, it's a continual process. And unfortunately, and this is a really hard one for people who have had very toxic families and really broken away from that to accept, we all make mistakes as parents. And even if you are a cycle breaker, you are going to break some cycles and you're going to continue some. And that's part and parcel of life. It might be that those really big ones that absolutely controlled your family dynamic and that have caused real trauma throughout your life are the ones that you manage to break. But there might be a point at which your children come to you and say, do you know what, you did this? And that was really hurtful for me. And that was really hard. And one of the biggest parts of being a cycle breaker and of being a responsive parent and a parent who builds that relationship with your child where they can come to you and say, is in holding yourself accountable and saying, instead of becoming defensive and saying, well, I did my best, and well, nobody's perfect, because none of us are, is in saying, do you know, I never looked at it from that perspective, and I'm really sorry that that made you feel that way. And changing that behavior if it's something that's ongoing, but in acknowledging and validating, I can't tell you how many people I speak to who would be able to repair their relationship with their parent, especially if they are estranged, if their parent would just be accountable.
I think that's such a big one. And that's something that personally I've tried so hard to acknowledge when I've messed up and say sorry. And it's like, it does feel like I'm fighting this instinct to be, you know, defensive. And it's a learned behavior. Like, I grew up with parents who never apologized and wouldn't even entertain a conversation about them potentially being to blame. So how could it possibly ever get to an apology?
But
the whole thing that you're talking about, you know, but us not beating ourselves up, like, we're only human, we're going to get it wrong. How much space is there for us to get this wrong? You know, there are times when I find myself shouting at my kids and trying to shut down their feelings because I know that I just can't deal with it. And I'm having some kind of response. It's not about them, it's about me. And I really beat myself up about it.
Yeah, it is really difficult. And I think that will, so many people will relate to that, in that you find yourself doing the things and sometimes maybe even you find your parents' voice slipping out. And that's the worst thing when you are somebody who's had a traumatic experience as a child, is hearing that parent come through you and thinking, oh my gosh, I'm just like them. I'm like them.
Yeah.
And you're not. And if there's been studies that have been conducted that show that you only really have to get it right as such around 30% of the time to be able to build a strong, secure foundation for a relationship with your child. That other part of the time when you are maybe missing the mark or things are going wrong or you've messed up, it's in the accountability, it's in the listening to them, allowing them a safe space to say, that was not cool. And I often joke that sometimes I cycle break too close to the sun, because my eldest will turn around to me and I'll be like, well, I didn't interrupt you. That was really rude. And I'm like, hang on a minute. I'm just going to have to sit with that for a second, because every instinct inside you goes, who the hell are you speaking to?
Yeah,
you know, that was how you would have been parented. But in creating that space for him to say, I didn't interrupt you, let me have my say here, and treating him with that respect and saying, okay, yeah, that's a valid point. And then going on to say, I hear what you're saying. I understand your frustrations around doing homework, and you've still got to do it. And still holding that boundary for them.
Yeah, I have to say, I don't know how you feel, Harriet, but I feel like parenting in this way only gets trickier as they get older. So my 13-year-old, it's actually like we can lose a whole evening to debating the ins and outs of whether she's allowed to do something or not, whether it's, I don't know, download Snapchat or have her phone in her room or whatever. Yeah. And I do catch myself thinking, oh, my parents had it right, because it literally would have been no. And if you guess why, it's because I said so. Mm-hmm. And that would be the end of the conversation. And I wouldn't have dared push it as much as she, I mean, she's not even pushing it. She's just having a normal conversation and putting forward different points of view. But there does come a point where I'm just like, this is too hard.
Yeah, no, thank you. It is really difficult, and that goes down to our societal conditioning. We still have this lingering notion of children being seen and not heard. And yeah. That was very much our great grandparents and grandparents' idea. And then as our parents came along, you might be a bit more heard, but you would never. There was the whole respect your elder thing, which I absolutely hate.
Tell us why you hate that. I saw you talking about this on Instagram recently.
Okay. So it doesn't even necessarily just boil down to respect is earned. I hear that passed a lot of, oh, respect is earned. We have a blanket rule in our house of we respect everybody and they respect us. And it doesn't matter whether you are younger, older, just because if somebody is older than you, it doesn't necessarily mean that they have got it right. And I come up against this so badly with school, especially now we're in secondary school, because there's very much still that seen, not heard mentality. Ruben will come back and say to me, well, I tried to explain this to the teacher and it wasn't my fault. And I mean, we've all heard that one, it wasn't my fault, but I'll actually hear him out and I'm like, oh, did you tell the teacher that this had happened and you'd lost this? And they're like, well, I tried, but they just told me to be quiet and get to the back of the room. Oh. And it's such a common thread amongst adults not hearing younger people, or if younger people try to be heard, seeing it as disrespect. Yeah. And that's not disrespect. That's asking for you to meet them. And we can't expect respect as elders if we're not willing to give it back. It's a modeled thing. So I really have never liked that phrase of respect your elders, because beyond just it needing to be earned, it has to be reciprocal. And somebody isn't necessarily right or worthy of respect if they can't treat you with kindness, with compassion, with respect just because they're older.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where that one comes from. But oh, I know what you mean about as they get older, feeling that real kind of pushback. And it is that societal conditioning of they need to be seen, not heard. If you think back to when you were younger and your parents would just say to you, because I said so, and apologies for going therapist on you, how did that make you feel?
I mean, I'm here for it, Harriet. Do your therapy on me.
That's thing. I mean, how did it make you feel?
It absolutely would have made me felt not being heard, not valued, not important, not worthy, all of those things. Mm. And I don't want my child to feel any of those things. So of course I wouldn't want to have that response to her.
But it's really hard not to when you're thinking to yourself, God, I'm the one in position of authority, as it is here. I'm the one who has to hold boundaries. I'm the one who has to hold space for not just my emotions that are triggered as hell right now because you're doing all the things that I would never have been allowed to do in answering back and doing all of these different things, and yet I've also got to hold space for you. It's an awful lot for a parent to take on, especially when you've never had that behavior modeled to you by your parents. You're kind of doing it without the blueprint.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This is what I was going to ask you about, because I feel like, you know, as someone who's on a bit of a cycle breaking journey myself, it sometimes feels like we're the generation who we're really bearing the brunt of this, like from both angles. You know, we grew up having parents behave a certain way around us, say certain things, not hold space for our emotions. But then, like you say, having to hold space for our kids' emotions and being triggered by what they're saying and what's happening, it's like it's exhausting. It's like, it's so hard.
It is so hard, and it's so much. And I feel like you've kind of got Gen X, millennial in that space where you're the first generations to be sort of stepping out of the seen, not heard, the answering back. And again, that's another phrase that I absolutely hate, because if you think about what it really means, it's not a very healthy phrase, is it, when we think about it? And it's something that I've said before to my son, you know, don't answer me back. And then when I've thought about it, I've been like, I don't want to tell him that he has to be silent in that. So now it's, okay, instead of don't answer back, it's, can you wait until I finish speaking, please? You hear me, I'll hear you. Yeah. And sometimes he'll look at me and you can just see the biggest eye roll. And he'll look at his dad, who's very different, and will just be like, don't answer back. And you can see him looking as if to say, dude, she's doing the therapy thing again. Like, I know. She's talking to me and making all the sense, and I don't like it.
From what you described, it sounds like you parent quite differently to your partner. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's probably quite a common situation. I know that in the past, I've had that situation here where I'm like really trying to, not only am I trying to deal with my own issues, I'm trying to parent in a certain way, and I'm trying to almost like coach my husband into parenting, but quite understandably getting pushback from him because he feels like he's being, you know, told what to do and patronized and nitpicked and all of that kind of stuff. So it kind of squeezes you into this quite awkward situation sometimes.
Yeah, it does. And it is really difficult. And I actually saw a brilliant idea, and it doesn't work for every family, but it was from, I think it was from Fritha Quinn, I think her name is, Tiger Lily Quinn.
Yeah, Fritha, yeah.
And I think it was her that I originally saw it from, where they have like a code word for each other when they're seeing something that to them is a red flag, and it might be toast. And it's just like, you need to back up a bit here. You're either too stroppy or you need to change your thing. And then maybe they'll go to another room and discuss what they thought was wrong. But absolutely.
That's genius.
I think that's such a good idea, because the communication needs to be there between both parties in saying, well, I thought you were too soft with this and they needed this. And I thought you were being too harsh with this and they needed this. And to hear each other out. And that's a lot of what our family breakdowns come down to, is not having that communication. But in having that word that literally just says red flag. This is like a little
time out,
little note just to say, I think you're doing something that's not right here. And again, it's not going to work for everybody, but I thought that was an ingenious way to kind of get on a level with your partner, because they can do it back to you. There will be occasions when my husband will look at me and be like, I think you're being unfair. And you don't want to undermine each other in front of the kids. But equally, it's your job to step in. And I see a lot of clients who perhaps had a very toxic relationship with one parent, but then had a very enabling response from another parent. And the issue there is, once they stop looking at the enabling parent as the good guy who's their safe zone, they start looking at them and going, why did you never step in? And that's where that fine line is as parents, is to be each other's support, but also to challenge each other and say, the way you're responding to that is not healthy. Let's work out together how we can do this.
It's interesting you use the word undermine, because that's something that I've got quite a tricky relationship with. In my mind, it kind of insinuates power. So the parents are the ones in this relationship with the power. And if somebody comes along and undermines my power, then that makes me cross or frustrated. And it's, I guess I'm kind of searching for an alternative way to describe what's going on there, because there definitely needs to be some level of, I don't know, authority is not the right word either, but kids need to listen to their parents from time to time, right? Because we do know what we're talking about, and we're here to guide them and help them, and they're not always going to like what we've got to say. And sometimes the two parents will disagree upon it, but the undermining to me just feels, I don't know, it just feels a bit old school to me. What do you think?
Okay, that's really interesting. That's not something that I would have thought of before. But what I would put to you is that as a parent, even as a parent who is cycle breaking, or as a parent who is really respecting their child's autonomy, you're always in a position of power. And you are the one who is in charge, if you like. you are the one who is in that position of power because you're the one with the financial stability for the child and within the family unit. You're the one who holds the boundaries for both, even though you can teach your child to set boundaries with you, which is really important and something that we all need to get better at doing and is really confronting when they start doing it. But that is something that is all of this is within your control. It's your house that they live in, even though it's their house as well. It's you that has to get them to go to school. So one of the things that often happens within emotional abuse is that we abuse that power. And we let that power either bleed into the child where the child becomes responsible for the relationship, or we don't hold that power in a responsible way. But regardless of whether we're comfortable with it, it's always going to be our power and our responsibility as parents. So it's interesting that undermining kind of brought up feelings of power for you. That's really interesting there, because you are the one with the power, which I can imagine from a child's point of view might have felt quite... out of control.
Yeah. Tune in next week for another therapy session where Harriet delves deeper into my childhood trauma.
That's really intrigued me that that undermine. Nobody's ever put that to me before that way. But actually, really? it is definitely coming from a position of power. But as a parent, you are the one with the power, and I think that's why it quite often so becomes so easy for people to abuse.
Yeah, of course. That makes so much sense.
And unintentionally.
So your podcast, which is brilliant, is about parental estrangement. And you talk to lots of different people about different aspects of it. But you, for your own personal journey, I'm guessing that it was a pretty huge decision for you to make to kind of cut ties with a parent.
Yeah, it was a massive decision. And I think there is often this misconception surrounding estrangement and cutting ties with a parent being no contact with a parent, that it's something done flippantly and that it's not something that has taken years, sometimes decades, to get to the point where you say enough is enough. And in no other relationship dynamic do we have the same kind of judgment of it, that it's just done flippantly. It's a really difficult decision to make, and not one that I actually ever wanted to have to make. In my ideal scenario, I would have had a much lower contact relationship with my mum, but that was not the way that things were going to go.
And you've got quite a big social media following, haven't you? And a while back, you pivoted from creating content about just general motherhood stuff to then focusing on parental estrangement and breaking the cycle. What made you do that, and what kind of response have you had to that? Was it quite a hard thing, because you're sharing quite personal things, and I guess you always have, but sharing general motherhood personal stuff feels quite different to sharing information about deep-rooted trauma.
I am an oversharer, which is a trauma response. Let's call it what it is. It's a trauma response. What made you do it? Trauma. It was an accidental decision almost. A lot of people were asking me, I haven't seen your mum in any of your videos for a long time. And for people that don't know, my story had gone along the lines of having a really enmeshed, which basically means a very interwoven, extremely overly close relationship with my mum. I didn't have really a separate identity outside of being her daughter, and what she liked, I liked, what she thought, I thought. And when I started to break away from that, that was when the breakdown in the relationship really became apparent. And it took me another decade really of stopping trying to be the good daughter. And we'd gone through the whole process of building her an annex on our property, because from that point I'd never moved out of our family home. We'd always lived together, and I needed space, but it was very much a, well, you can't leave me. So we decided that we would build an annex, and that would be kind of the happy compromise. She'd have a flat, a nice little annex that was totally her design, self-contained, and we'd have our own home and our own space. And in my head, that felt like a really, really good compromise, which bless my soul, that was not a good compromise, but that felt like it was the best way to both be a loyal daughter but also a good wife and do the things that I wanted to do with my life. So I was getting lots of messages on social media saying, you've now completed the annex, but we never see anything about your mum, and does she still live in the annex? And I'd started saying, well, no, I no longer have contact with her. And the amount of people that had messaged and said, you know, I don't have contact with my parent either. Or, oh my goodness, I could always see that something wasn't quite right. And I could, you know, see that you weren't happy. And it was really enlightening to have such a response from people and to see such a difference. And that was kind of where it stemmed from, is having such a big response of people saying, oh, this has been my experience too, and realizing that this isn't just me. And that's one of the biggest things for people who are no contact with a parent or who have a really difficult relationship with a parent, is realizing that on a logical level, you know, it can't just be you, but on an illogical level, which you've been conditioned to buy into, you feel very alone with it. And that's where that all stemmed from. And then cycle breaking parenting, once I looked more into it, I became a coach and I started training as a trainee therapist. That all really made me realize that's what I do. That's what I'm trying to do. And if I can encourage more people to look at the things that they do, then that would be great.
It's so good though, because I, you know, obviously social media gets criticized a lot, and there's, you know, there's a lot of things that, there are lots of issues with social media, obviously. But I would absolutely say that the kind of content that you're creating and the kind of content that other people who are creating, that really supports and helps and makes people feel less alone. It is that feeling of, oh, it's not just me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as somebody who has broken contact with one of my parents, you know, due to childhood trauma, I was watching, you know, your content and looking at your social media posts, and it really made me feel like, it almost like validated my life choices. It was almost like, oh, I'm not a terrible person. Mm-hmm. Okay. Which is crazy that you need somebody on social media. I mean, you and I have met in real life, Harriet, so you're not a stranger, but yeah. You know, for a lot of people, it's like, oh, a stranger on the internet has validated my life choices. Woo! You know,
it is. It feels really weird, but equally, is it not weird that your parents are unwilling to do that themselves and to offer that validation and to reflect on their behaviours and the things that have happened that have led you to become no contact? Because as I say, nobody comes no contact overnight. So if we as adult children who have become estranged can support each other and say, hey, you know what, you're not a bad person for making that decision to put yourself and your family first, then that's really powerful.
What would you say has been the hardest thing then for you about estranging yourself from a parent? Like, what advice would you have for someone who's listening and perhaps they're thinking, this is kind of making me feel like I need to do something about my own personal situation, or perhaps they are estranged, but they're struggling with the emotions that come with it. What kind of advice would you give them?
I think working on yourself, and I know that sounds really corny and everybody's like, oh, work on yourself, great. I think working on yourself and focusing on your own healing and your own mental health is huge, but also your own self-awareness, your own sense of what you like. Often people who have grown up in, especially in enmeshed families like my own, but also within a dysfunctional family dynamic, grow up without much of a sense of self. And what that means is we hit 30 and we're like, oh, who am I? What do I like? I went and perhaps I did this career for my parent, or I always agreed with my parent on this, or I always pretended I didn't like this for my parent. Now I'm free from that. What can I do? So developing your own sense of self, focusing on yourself as healing, and also accepting that there isn't any guilt or shame to be had around choosing you. And that's probably one of the biggest ones, because you are conditioned as a child growing up in dysfunction to always agree or bow down to the parent, that you're always taught to defer to them.
Yeah, that's so true. And also, you posted recently about self-gaslighting, which I thought was so interesting. That's definitely something I've had to examine in myself. There was times I've had like about 2 years of therapy, And there were times when I'd be talking about stuff that had happened and, like, you know, justifying what had happened. And, you know, my therapist would say, imagine that happened to your child. Like, would you be okay with that? And it's like, no. And so to hear you talking about it as being self-gaslighting, I was like, yeah, totally, that rings true.
Yeah. Self-gaslighting is, oh, it's horrible. And it's one of the things that so many of us fall into. And when I was talking about it in that particular context, for people who don't know, self-gaslighting is kind of making those excuses for that behaviour, is telling yourself, well, was it really that bad? Is re-examining the things through different lenses and trying to make it less than it was. And trying to say, oh, you know, it really wasn't that big a deal. I'm just being dramatic. And all those things, I would invite you to question, where does that voice come from of that? It's not a big deal. I'm just being dramatic, because it's probably not your voice that's saying these things. It's probably your parent who's saying you're dramatic and has gaslighted you before, or a partner, depending on the context. But what I would say is, if ever you are self-gaslighting, one of the most powerful things is, like you've just said, to imagine a child that you love, be it your child, be it someone else's, if you're not a parent, and to step back, imagine the scenario that you are self-gaslighting over happening to that child, and then ask the question, was it that bad? And the impact that that has is huge.
Yeah, I feel like we've covered two quite meaty topics here. I don't want anyone to get confused and think that if you are a cycle-breaking parent, you have to break ties with a parent, because the two things can cross over, but they're not one and the same, are they, Harriet?
Not at all, no. And I am estranged from my mum, and that's what led me to realise that I was a cycle breaker, but I was already breaking the cycle well before. And I would say the majority of people are in some way trying to even subconsciously break some kind of cycle in the way that they parent. We all have things that we will look back at and think, oh, well, I'm not going to do that. I'll do this differently. And conversely, as a cycle breaker, you might well have things that you look back on that your parent, who could have been truly horrendous, did, that you think, I'm going to keep that because that did make me feel good. And that's okay as well. Relationships are complicated. It doesn't have to be black or white, estranged or not. It's complicated.
Yeah. Well, listen, Harriet, thank you so much for chatting to me today. Where can we find you online to hear more from you?
Well, you can find me online at Toby and Rue on TikTok and on Instagram. And you can also find me at @unfollowing_mum on Insta if you have a particular interest in estrangement or generational trauma. That page has a wealth of information and a wonderful, really fast-paced growing community of people who are very like-minded and support each other. So it's a really nice place to be. I also have my podcast, which is Unfollowing Mum Pod, which is available on all streaming platforms.
Brilliant. So we've got no excuse to be up to date with everything you're doing. So
thank you. It's all there.
Thank you, Harriet. It's been so great to chat to you.
Oh, thank you, Alison. It's been fab.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.